You're listening to a podcast from the Today programme on BBC Radio 4.
One day soon I'm gonna tell the moon about the crying game.
Neil Jordan is a storyteller equally at home on the cinema screen and the pages of a novel. His thriller, The Drowned Detective, has all the ingredients of a movie, a fast-moving plot, a cast of dark and intriguing characters, a setting that disturbs you from the very first page. All that and a strong whiff of the surreal, and you realise in this story that you're in the hands of a master of dialogue. Welcome. When you're writing fiction, putting a story on the page, do you imagine yourself being behind a camera? Is that how you see it?
Well, you kind of have to see it, you know, in a way, and it's in a strange way. It's a very lonely pursuit writing a novel, you know, but in a strange way, you can be as alone on a set with 300 people around you. And to direct a movie correctly or to see it correctly, you kind of have to place yourself in a very solipsistic, isolated position in a way. You know, otherwise, you're influenced by everybody and the movie becomes no good, you know.
So the loneliness of the writer is, in your view, essential, really. That's what
you're saying. Well, it's also accentuated by the position of the director, you know. I mean, there's nothing as strange as being asked 25 different questions a minute, you know what I mean, about what your intentions are and what you're... So you're far better off to keep yourself in an isolated place than to keep your brain clear and to see things as clearly as possible.
And in a sense, you're that magic eye that's omniscient. I mean, you can move around the room, you see the room, you see the street, you see the bridge where at one point in the story a girl is apparently going to jump into the river from... that kind of thing, you see it, you're there.
Oh, well, that's why I started making movies in the end, because I was writing fiction in Ireland, and I started with a book of stories, and I wrote a novel called The Past, which was entirely based on a photographer. And I realised everything I was writing was basically to do with visual description, in a way. Sometimes when people describe novels as very imagistic, it seems to me to be a slight criticism, you know, and because in a way they shouldn't be imagistic, you know, but... That's the kind of being I am, I suppose, and there's no point in resisting it any longer.
Well, we talk about images, but writing novels is about having an ear for speech, isn't it, in the end?
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. I think it's a weird thing. It's kind of a knack, really. It's the one thing I most love to do is to write dialogue. And I most love to write dialogue that doesn't say what the characters are thinking, you know what I mean? Because people very rarely say what they think.
You know, they reveal themselves unwittingly.
Yeah, and it's much more interesting. Even when I'm going through a screenplay sometimes and people say, well, why don't they say, I want to get back to my wife or something? That's the last thing you say in those circumstances. Do you understand what I mean? It's kind of, and the fun of and the beauty of dialogue, actually, that it is elusive and kind of oblique, you know?
Saying what you feel is in a way unrealistic.
My point of view is, I rarely say,
not the way we are.
The entire fiction work is avoidance of saying what you actually are, in a way, you know.
Well, talking about, you know, the realism of the story, or the realistic setting of the story, it's a very gritty setting, somewhere in Eastern Europe, we don't know where. It's a world that we recognise with, you know, with secret policemen, with corrupt people, with Pussy Riot-type demonstrators. It's a world that we're all familiar with. But it's a very despairing world, in a way. There's no one there with much hope.
Not in the environment our sense of poor Jonathan finds himself in. I mean, I wrote this book in a way... I had no political axe to grind, or I wasn't speaking about any realistic place. I'd spent a lot of time in Hungary doing a series called The Borgias. I spent a lot of time in various places, Bucharest and different places in Eastern Europe, you know. But I just wanted to reflect a mood in a strange way, which is why I made it non-specific, you know. And it's a mood of a kind of an order or a world crumbling. I mean, I suppose in Europe at the moment you do feel that whatever structures are holding the societal agreement together are collapsing by the moment.
And your central character, Jonathan, who's an absorbing character, is somebody who can't put his own life together. So he's another example of someone who is really lost in this world that unfolds around him, which is violent, mysterious, and difficult. Didn't you want to give us somebody who had hope? Somebody who might spring
free. Well, there is hope. There is hope. I mean, it's a portrait of marriage as well as everything else. And it's a portrait of two people who have been together 20 years and have a child. And this mysterious thing has vanished from their lives, you know what I mean, which holds people together. I think it's an experience that happens in every person's around the age of 45. Or, you know, it happens in every marriage, in every relationship, in every human being, where whatever is that sap of urgency seems to have gone to somebody else or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
This strikes me as a story that could work on the screen as it's there. I mean, is it going to?
Well, I mean, it's. I always loved that Nicholas Rogue movie, Don't Look Now. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes.
Rather similar.
It's a haunting movie.
Similar. It ends up in a similar terrain of the irrational and stuff like that. I would like to make a movie of this book, and Amazon have a film studio now, and they have bought it, and I'm talking to them, so perhaps. I've never made a movie of a book I've written to date, but I might make one of this one.
You can listen to more free content from the Today programme by going to www.bbc.co.uk/today.